a little Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds that day.
This is from the 60s when they did a Christmas thing for their fan club every year.
I think this was something that was never released. It was just something they messed around with.
I think this is something that there's an album, of a bootleg album of these things that were released to just their fan club. And they're all horrible like this.
Hey, Paul, I've got an idea for a song.
It was officially released in 1995. They made a pressing of this as well.
Let's say Christmas time is here again.
I read a piece today where they were debating which Beatle made the worst Christmas song, Paul McCartney or John Lennon. Wonderful Christmas Time for McCartney won, beating out Happy Christmas, War is Over by John Lennon. And the article went into like 25 paragraphs on each song, delving in. And they decided that Wonderful Christmas Time is worse because of that sproinging sound that goes on throughout it. But that would be up there. That would definitely be in the competition. This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion brought to you by Window World, the original $189 window company, the number one replacement window company in the United States. And here in St. Louis, you can find out all about them by going to windowworldstlouis.com. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geiss are here with me. And now Colin Jeffrey, our news director, joins us in his alter ego as Showbiz Boy for our weekly Showbiz recap. And we have a lot of movies to get to. But first, we have breaking news from the Star Wars world.
Yes.
Carrie Fisher had a heart attack on board a plane today.
Yes.
And is in intensive care right now at a hospital in Los Angeles. Apparently, this happened 15 minutes before the flight from London to L.A. landed. She was in London, I'm guessing, for a premiere of Rogue One.
Yeah, I don't know. That's good. I mean, she's, yeah. I don't know.
If you're in the Star Wars universe, you probably get that call every year. Okay, show up at this date for this red carpet.
Yeah,
and,
I wonder.
She had this massive heart attack on board the plane, and the EMTs came and helped her out, and hopefully she'll be okay. 60 years old.
Yeah.
And done enough to her body pharmaceutically to cause all sorts of problems at this point in her life.
Yes. I hope she's okay, though, because that would be... She's set up to be very important, at least through the next film, because she's now sort of leading the
Last year we found
resistance.
Out in The Force Awakens she was a big part of it, because we found out about
Kylo Ren is her son,
right,
with Han Solo.
Yes.
And this would just be I don't know, this would be sad.
How old is Carrie Fisher?
She's 60.
Still 60.
Wow.
60 years old. And how is Rogue One doing at the box office? Has it made $11 billion yet?
It is the second largest December opening ever, behind
Force Awakens?
Yes. It made $155 million last weekend.
Wow.
It did very well.
I am very happy for my Mississippi Grind co-star, Ben Mendelsohn.
Yes, who was excellent as Director Krennic in that. He was very good.
He's very, very good in the movie. And you liked it. I heard you reviewing it last week.
Quite a bit.
All right, we have a bunch of movies to get to for this week. Some of them opened on Wednesday. Some of them are opening today. And one, the new Denzel Washington movie, Fences, is opening up on Sunday. Which of these would you like to start with?
Let's start with the one that shouldn't have opened. Sing, the animated movie that opened on Wednesday.
Okay.
We're going to talk about that briefly. It doesn't deserve a whole lot of time, and it's kind of frustrating. This was a good year for animated movies. Zootopia, Moana, Kubo and the Two Strings. Those are all very good animated films from this year. Sausage Party for adults. Good animated film.
Yes.
Now we have Sing. The premise is there is a down-on-his-luck koala bear. Dan, it's not based on a true story. I'm going to preempt you. Sorry.
Okay.
There's a down-on-his-luck koala bear that bought a sort of old-fashioned theater and wanted to put on plays and shows in it, and it's not going well. This koala bear is voiced by Matthew McConaughey.
Mm-hmm.
Koala bears don't sound like that. If they had voices in my head, they would not sound like Matthew McConaughey. So problem number one, you miscast the lead character. And he decides, my theater is struggling, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to put on a singing audition. And the grand prize will be $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, his secretary that's a going blind llama or sheep or something, Miss Tyre, an iguana. I think she's actually an iguana, sorry.
Wait a minute. We started with llama.
Yeah, then I'm crossing the secretary from Utopia.
It's actually an iguana.
It's actually like an iguana, yeah.
Okay. Somebody needs to go to the zoo.
In Zootopia, the assistant mayor, the deputy mayor, is a sheep.
Fine.
So I'm just crossing them
okay.
all. So she mistypes it and puts like $10,000 or $100,000. So, of course, everyone wants to come and win the money. And this is the main idea. Hey, we're promised lots of songs in the advertisements for it. They're like 65 songs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like portions of 65 songs.
But is there anyone in this that can actually sing?
Everyone in this can sing. That is not the issue.
Okay.
It's everyone can sing. And I was kind of shocked at a few of them, how good they were. Scarlett Johansson plays a porcupine, I believe. And we know she can sing. Mm-hmm. She's one of the best voice actresses working.
Mm-hmm.
She's excellent. Mm. And they just misuse her. Mm-hmm. Reese Witherspoon, again, sings well enough. She plays, I believe, Rosita the Pig. Seth MacFarlane, we know, can sing. He plays a little mouse called Mike that, of course, is sort of a Sinatra-type vibe. Ugh. There's a shock.
Have I mentioned how sick I am of Seth MacFarlane and the Sinatra thing?
I don't know, but he does have a great voice, singing-wise.
Tori Kelly, who's a singer, is in it and has sort of the big song. Taron Egerton, who was in The Kingsman. He was the young man in The Kingsman. He's actually got a background, I think, on like stage.
Okay, so are they singing original songs?
Oh, no. They're all popular songs that you would know. That's why you come in. So you know all these songs and you can sing along and it's fun and your kids will enjoy it.
You know the phrase jukebox musical? Like
a
Broadway show?
That's
like,
what this is.
Like Jersey Boys or the Carole King musical Beautiful.
Yeah.
It was essentially you seeing other people sing the hits of these famous people.
Yeah.
And this is a jukebox musical movie.
Yes, except those are good. Those are good. Like Jersey Boys is great, Beautiful, great. This, the problem is they promise that there's going to be a lot of singing and we're going to see these people train to put on an amazing show to save this theater.
Mm-hmm.
But they do a training montage where everyone is practicing singing and they play a song that no one is singing over all of them. So it's like they're silently singing in the background and we're hearing another song over it. Well, no. If you're going to do a training montage, show me that they're getting better, the exciting songs they might be singing. And instead, they just drown out over it. And then it goes into like 60 minutes in the middle of just all their backstories that as an adult, you're not going to care about. And as a kid, they're not funny enough to keep your kids interested. It tries to walk this line and fails miserably. Why you're going to go is because there's nothing else out for kids right now. You can't take them to Star Wars. It's not appropriate.
Well, Moana, is that still around?
I don't think so anymore.
No?
Might be.
Got pushed out?
Yeah. But there's so many movies out right now. So you're going to take them to this, and this will probably do second best. It's just a really not very good animated movie, and that's a shame. I will say the third act, when they finally put on their show, it's fun.
Right.
It's fun enough. It just takes... It's close to 2 hours. It's too long.
No,
it's too long.
Yeah.
Too long for an animated movie.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 3. It's one of the worst animated movies of the year.
Okay. Let's talk about a movie that I don't think either of us has seen that's opening and I think is probably going to be of interest to a lot of people, called Passengers.
Yes.
This is a movie with Jennifer Lawrence, one of the hottest actresses in the world, and Chris Pratt, one of the hottest young actors in the world. You have not seen it, correct?
No, but I've... Read a good chunk of it.
Okay, you read a good
chunk
of it. Yeah,
this script has been floating around since 2007. Always a great sign when it takes 10 years to get a movie out after it's been first written. And apparently what came out is very different than what ended up being. So I haven't seen it, so I can't comment with any authority. I can tell you the general premise is humanity is trying to expand into other parts of the galaxy. And so they... put a bunch of people on the ship. They put them in little cryotubes to knock them out, and the ship's going really fast. And 90 years before they arrive, something goes wrong, and Chris Pratt is awoken.
Okay, they're on their ship that's going to take them 120 years to get to wherever it is, and all the people on board are going to be asleep until just a month or two before they get to this colony.
Homestead 2. Really clever name there.
Okay, so and it's completely robotic, the rest of the ship. Everybody's in cryotubes. cryosleep, and then the ship encounters a meteor storm.
Yes.
And it does just enough damage to wake up only one person on board the ship.
Of course.
And that's Chris Pratt.
And he, of course, is someone who likes to fix things in a society where everything's robotic now. So, hey, that's lucky. But, again, I'm willing to overlook all that.
But at that point, he wakes up and realizes, I'm not going to get there till 90 years from now.
Yes.
In other words, I'm going to die on this, because he can't go back into cryosleep.
Right. His thing is damaged.
And so a certain amount of time goes by, and he decides, you know, there's this hot chick asleep over here. Why don't I just wake her up, and at least the trip, you know, she won't live to see the end of the trip either, but at least I'll have somebody to fool around with. Right? That's the plot?
That's the plot.
And she is Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes.
And he wakes her up without telling her that that's the reason he wakes her up.
Yeah.
But later on in the movie, we don't have time to do the whole movie, but later on in the movie, she finds out that he woke her up for exactly that reason, and she realizes, I'm going to die on board this ship instead of going to this colonial outpost way out in the galaxy, and she's not happy with him.
No.
But I'm guessing, and I don't know, you read it, I didn't, I'm guessing in the end, love triumphs over all.
Well, I don't want to spoil anything. I've read it. I will say this.
I haven't seen the movie, and I'm telling you, that's what happens in the movie. Dan, do you think there's any chance I'm wrong?
Nope.
No.
I think you are exactly right.
Do you think there's any chance that two attractive people like Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt don't get it on?
No.
I think we're going to... Oh, no. In fact, I think from the previews, it's pretty clear that's what happens. And then there's like, yeah. I think this is going to test whether or not Chris Pratt is a bankable star. We always talk about Tom Cruise, and like him or not, the guy doesn't make bombs. Will Smith just made the worst movie in his career. It made $7 million, Collateral Beauty, it's the worst opening in his career.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise never does that. I think we may have found Chris Pratt's, like, because from Wednesday to Sunday, this thing might be lucky to do $35 million, and I can tell you the budget was well north of that. This is going to struggle mightily,
wow,
it looks like. So,
all right.
Passengers, we haven't seen it, but...
Yeah, probably pass on it.
Yes.
You want to pass? There are injures.
We're about to get to a series
thank you.
Of... Yes.
Thank you very much.
That's very good.
Thank you.
Mic drop.
We're about to get to a series of really good movies.
Yes.
There are many better options.
Okay,
this
before we get to the really good movies, I have to talk about another movie that opens today called Why Him?
Oh, I've seen the trailers for this.
Yes,
and I saw the trailers in the theater,
mm-hmm.
which the F-bomb is in there. I don't know how many times.
Well, I want to mention. Let's talk about this aspect of this movie first. There are some times where I go to a movie specifically because I'm looking for moronic fun. I want to see idiotic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you go see Bad Santa 2.
Yes.
That's why I went to see Hot Tub Time Machine and its sequel. The original was good. The sequel sucked. I went to see Sausage Party.
Yeah.
All of these, by the way, are moronic fun with extreme raunch. And I'm here to tell you that except for Sausage Party, Why Him is the raunchiest movie of the year. Raunchier, Dan, than Bad Santa 2,
wow.
Which I know you saw.
Yeah.
That's saying something.
Now, this movie stars James Franco as a Silicon Valley billionaire. He made his money in video games. And he's a guy who has no filter and usually no shirt.
I noticed that in the trailers.
Bryan Cranston plays the uptight father of a Stanford College student, played by an actress named Zoe Deutsch. She is in love with the James Franco character. And they invite Cranston and his wife, who's played by Megan Mullally, to go visit them in California, where they show up and they see this mansion that this guy has and who he is, and this guy with no filter, and they're shocked by everything he says, everything he does, everything he has. One of my favorite actors, Keegan-Michael Key from Key and Peele, is also in this movie. He plays James Franco's kind of right-hand man, his butler, man about the house, whatever you want to call him. He's always funny. I've never said to myself, boy, Keegan-Michael Key's not a funny guy. He's funny in everything he does, and he's funny in this. Kelly Cuoco from The Big Bang Theory. You don't see her, but you hear her as the voice of Justine, who's kind of like Siri times 10.
Mm-hmm.
She is the artificial intelligence in every room. You just talk to the ceiling, and Justine can hear you, and she sees everything, and Kaley Cuoco is the voice. Cedric the Entertainer is in this movie as a right-hand man of Bryan Cranston's CEO of the stationery company that he runs that's facing financial problems because fewer people are using paper. This whole thing was directed by one of the guys who wrote Meet the Parents, which is a similar plot, right? The parents come and they meet the father of the they meet the proposed person, and there's a clash between the generations and everything else. This is moronic fun. Mm-hmm. It is raunch. It's exactly what I thought it was going to be going in. And it works because James Franco plays moronic fun so well. And even more so because Bryan Cranston is so good as playing the put-upon guy. And he also gets to do some slapstick kind of stuff, which he hasn't done since Malcolm in the Middle. I mean, he used to be on a TV show where he did this sort of thing all the time, and now he gets a chance to do it again. Interestingly, Zoe Deutsch, as the daughter, who's supposed to be the center of all this chaos, she's given nothing to do. You could take her out of this movie, and nobody would notice, except that she's the one that James Franco kind of, has to hug and kiss and make inappropriate remarks around. Megan Mullally, by the way, is also very funny as the wife. There's a cameo in here by Elon Musk. There are a couple of rock stars who I will not give away as a surprise. You will recognize them in this movie. Again, I want to say this is even raunchier than Bad Santa 2. Do not let your kids under 15 or 14 years old go see this movie.
Under 25.
30. it probably has, Dan's right, the highest percentage of F-bombs of any movie this year. And I give it a 6 out of 10. It's not a great movie. But it's not a horrible movie, but you have to go in knowing what to expect. If you're expecting anything besides moronic, raunchy fun, don't go see this movie.
I want to go see this. When I saw the trailer, I wanted to go see it. And we saw it when we right before Bad Santa 2.
Yes. It plays right along that same line.
Yeah.
And by the way, probably funnier than that, what's that Jennifer Aniston, Jason Bateman Christmas movie that's out now?
Oh, the Office Christmas Party?
Yes. That's dead, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. I don't know how well Why Him is going to do at the box office, but it'll be around for Christmases to come as a raunchy Christmas movie.
It'll do well enough. It's the adult option that's not a Star Wars or J-Law movie.
Yeah. Let's talk about a movie that both of us did see this week, an independent movie called Lion.
Yeah.
This is a really, really good movie.
Yeah.
And it's one of those movies that it had a personal thing for me in it because it's about a lost boy. Did you ever get lost when you were a kid?
My parents left me in the grocery store once.
They did.
When you were very young?
Yeah, and then they forgot me at school once, but I was this annoying always, so I don't
not
think...
Not really an accident.
I think forgot, in quotes, we need a break.
Oh, wow.
He'll be fine.
Wow. Did you ever get lost when you were a kid?
Yeah, I did.
At a mall or something? Or
No. I did. I went to a kindergarten class, but it was at someone's... house. It was before they had kindergarten, and they were going on vacation, and I sat outside. My mom dropped me off and had no idea that this entire family was going on vacation.
So you just sat outside all day?
I sat outside. Wait, they found me. They went to check the house and found me and ended up taking me home. But there were times that I got lost in the store too.
Did you get lost, Paul?
Yes. Ian, did you ever get lost as a kid?
I can't recall a specific time now. I'm sure it happened.
I vividly remember.
Have you lost Archie yet?
No. No, thank you.
Well, he's just turned two.
Is mobile.
Yeah, he is.
Yes. Like Archie is.
Yes, no, he's very mobile. Oh. So
have you considered getting him a leash?
Yes.
I just want to give you an idea of what Archie is like. If you can imagine somebody holding a child and that child's feet are running in the air all the time.
It's the cartoon where the motion blur on the legs are just constantly.
And as soon as you put him down, boom!
Yes.
He's gone. Well, I was kind of like that, and I don't remember how old I was, but I'm going to say 6, 7, or 8 years old, somewhere in there. And I was on vacation with my parents. I don't remember where, but we're walking along with some relatives of mine, and off in the distance, I see a Ferris wheel that is at some sort of pop-up carnival. And I say to my parents, can I go to that? And my mom or dad said, yeah, okay, go ahead. We'll meet you there. And I ran off, and I went to it, and I never saw them again for what seemed at that point to be an interminable amount of time. And I'm wandering around, can't find them. I'm crying like crazy. A police officer finds me, or somebody points me towards the police officer, or vice versa, and he ends up actually picking me up and taking me to the police station.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow.
Which is not far away from there, but my parents are obviously panicked, and they don't know where they are, and somebody at that carnival sees these frenzied parents walking around. We think that there was a police officer here. We may have taken him. So, you know, my parents eventually found me. Now, I don't know how long this was. It could have been 20, 30 minutes. In my memory, it's a day and a half.
Oh, yeah.
It was horrible. I'm right now talking about it, I'm getting that empty feeling in the pit of my stomach of like, Mom and Dad.
You get that anxiety going. Oh, yeah.
Like, I'll never see you again. Now, yeah. With that as prelude, let's talk about Lion. Here's the basic plot of this movie. It's about a 5-year-old boy in India by the name of Saru, who incidentally is played by a wonderful kid actor named Sonny Pawar. So this 5-year-old boy, Saru, hangs out with his brother a lot. They grow up in a part of India, one of the many parts of India that's completely impoverished. And his brother, who's only a few years older than him, what do you think, Colin, maybe 12?
Yeah.
He has to work and find jobs for their mom. The mom's job is carrying rocks. That's how poor that part of India is. She carries rocks for a living. And so Saru and his brother, whose name is Gadu,
Saru and Gadu?
Yes, these are Indian names. They are together all the time. And at one point, Gadu is going to go off the next morning to go somewhere far away for a farm job. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Saru wants to go with him. And he convinces him, I can go with you. I can do whatever it is. I'm heavy. I can pick up the bicycle. I can pick this thing up. I can do it. And so Gadu says, okay, you can come with me. And they get on a train. And he's 5 years old, so he gets exhausted on the train. He falls asleep going there. And when he wakes up, they're at a train station. And he's laying down on a bench. And Gadu, his older brother, says to him, stay here. I'll be back. You sleep. Stay on this bench. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to go find out about the work. And then I'll come back and I'll get you. And Saru falls asleep on the bench. And when he wakes up, Gadu's not there. No one's there. The train station is completely empty. He has no idea where he is. He has no idea what's going on. There's a train at the train station that's just kind of sitting there. It's not idling or anything. There's nobody on it. So he wanders in there, and he's looking through this one car of this train, and he's still a little bit tired, and he can't find Gadu. He's shouting his name. He can't find him. He just decides to kind of sit down on a bench and go back to sleep. And the next thing you know, the train is moving. He wakes up. It's moving. And he's the only person in this car of this train, and he can't get out until the train comes to a stop. And we learn later, by the time it comes to a stop, it's gone 1,000 miles.
Oh, man.
Now, imagine you're 5 years old and you fell asleep and you went from here to the East Coast mm-hmm. on a train by yourself. And when you wake up, nobody speaks the same language as you, because he comes from a part of India where they speak Hindi. Mm-hmm. And he's in Calcutta where they speak Bengali. So he doesn't know where he is. He's not even 100% sure where he's from. Nobody understands where he is. That's the kickoff to this story, the first half hour of this story. And it's heartbreaking to see this little mm-hmm. kid walking through the streets of Calcutta. He has nothing. He has nothing to eat. He barely has clothes on his body. He has no prospects. He knows no one, and he can't talk to anybody. I'm going to tell you right there, that's the plot of a great movie.
Wow.
Just hearing that.
Based on a true story, Dan.
Yes, it is.
It was written, the young man, Saru, wrote this book. And they adapted the screenplay for it.
How old was the oldest brother?
Maybe like 12.
He was
old like that.
Oh, okay.
Not that much.
In our world, he was too young in America to give him this level of responsibility.
Yeah. Yes.
None of us in St. Louis would say, oh, okay, take your younger brother to Chicago.
Yeah.
And that's not the distance they're going. It'd be like, oh, take your young brother to, I don't know, Dallas. And then he ends up in Columbia.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happens here. It's like you have to put it in perspective that this is not a small distance, and it's decades. It's not like 50 years ago, but it's like 20 or 25 years ago. It takes place long enough ago that there were no cell phones there at all. There weren't phone service to a lot of people. They didn't have indoor plumbing in a lot. I mean, this is not something where it's like you could call the police station and they could fax a picture even.
Right.
This is, we lost a kid.
Yep.
That's.
Now, I have to ask you, because you've seen the movie. Should we talk about more of the plot going forward, or do you think that's enough of a basis to make people want to see this movie?
I think that's enough. Other than just, I mean, he wrote the book. Like,
yes.
I don't want people to think this is something that's going to tear your heart out. This is a relatively good Christmas movie, I think. They picked a good time of year, not just for awards, because Dev Patel deserves, he plays...
The older Saru.
The older Saru. He's very good in this, and he's becoming quickly, I think, one of the more sort of charismatic actors, and I just enjoy watching
him. Yep. This is the first movie in which I have enjoyed Nicole Kidman's work
since
To Die For, to go back 20-plus years. I just think she's been terrible, or she's made terrible choices about the movies that she's done. She's very, very good in this. Rooney Mara plays Dev Patel's girlfriend. She's very good. I got to tell you, I really, really enjoyed this movie. As heartbreaking as it was for me to have those memories come flooding back and to see that first part of the movie, I think I got to give this thing maybe an 8, 8.5 out of 10.
I gave it an 8 out of 10. Very good, well-adapted screenplay.
It's called Lion.
And that's... They have got to come up with titles. Like, this isn't as bad as Captain Fantastic, but they have to start coming up with titles that help people.
When
more.
You hear Lion, you think, oh, that's either
I think Life of Pi, where it was the tiger on the, like...
Right. Or you think it's going to be a kid movie, an animated movie. It's not.
No.
But it's a wonderful, very moving, very well-made movie. It's called Lion.
And it's just under 2 hours, which for a drama, kudos.
Yep.
Like, good on them.
Yeah, very good. Now, we got to take a break, and then we still have more movies that are opening this weekend that we have to get to.
Three more
to get to, believe it or not. And then here's the thing about this. We're going to do all of them today, and then next week, no movies are opening. These are movies that are around for Christmas through New Year's.
Yeah.
And so next week on the show, we're going to do our best and worst lists.
Yeah.
Best and worst movies of 2016. That'll be on next week's show here on the Big 550 KTRS.
Comes the time for Christmas, and I really have to ask, if this is feeling merry, how much longer must it last?
It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Christmas weekend brings a lot of movies into the theaters, including Passengers, which Colin and I didn't see, and after talking about it, we've decided we're not going to. Sing, the animated movie that kids will go to this weekend, but Colin says is only a 3 out of 10. There's Lion, which we both liked a lot. We gave an 8 out of 10. Why Him? With James Franco and Bryan Cranston. We gave a 6 out of 10. And then there's a movie that's opening up on Sunday. Odd that it wouldn't be open today. It's opening on Christmas Day with Denzel Washington and Viola Davis.
Yes.
And the film version of a play that was written by August Wilson. My wife and I actually saw this on stage when James Earl Jones did it.
And was amazing.
He was very, very good. And then a couple of years ago, these two people, Denzel Washington and Viola Davis, did it on Broadway. And I think they both won Tonys for it.
Yeah.
And so now here's the film version, which you've seen. What do you think?
If you've seen the previous work, you're familiar with it. I can't go into too much plot because we're sort of pressed for time, but the premise is there's a man growing up in the 1950s. They have a small house. He was a very, very successful Negro League baseball player and is now kind of a prideful man and resentful that the barriers that existed because of his race have now been sort of broken down. And it's he and his family. He's got a young son who's trying to get recruited to play football in college, and he's now the father, Denzel Washington, is now a a sanitation worker. He's a garbage man. Mm-hmm. And he's carved out a life for them, but it was never what he thought. And it's coming to terms with that and just the changing world. If you've seen the play, it's different than the movie. In that this actually feels constrained, which is odd. You've got more room in a movie, but it's not even that the cinematography is not good. It just doesn't translate as well. I think you need to have the people there. Some plays need to have that energy of the people being there and seeing it performed in front of you. Mm-hmm. And I think this loses some of it. It's good. It's still very good. You get great performances. Viola Davis is spectacular, as you'd expect. She's amazing in this and will likely win an Academy Award for it, for supporting actress. But it's very good. It's quiet in that it's a small story.
I've only seen a clip from it, and in the clip, it seems like Denzel Washington is really serious Denzel Washington.
Yes, he also directed it and did a good job of directing it.
Yeah.
Like, kudos to him on the directing side. It's good. It's a very good movie. It's just a crowded time of year to come out.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Very good movie.
So. All right. There's another serious movie that opened up on Wednesday, which is in some art theaters around town. It's called Jackie. The Jackie in question is Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, played in this movie by Natalie Portman, who I think gives one of the best performances of the year as Jackie Kennedy. It takes place on the day that her husband is assassinated, and the week to 10 days after that?
The Time interview she gave 10 days after the assassination.
She's talking to this reporter from Time magazine, who's played by Billy Crudup, and she's talking about what has happened in that time, but she's also very aware of the legacy that she wants to leave behind as the JFK legacy. The whole notion of Camelot being associated with the Kennedy years came out of that Time magazine interview. And it is because of what goes on in this movie. Now, I will say that this movie does one thing spectacularly well. One thing that I had never considered before, which is it does a very good job of showing what it was like to have your life completely ripped out from under you. Now, many people who are listening to us right now know the pain of having a loved one die. A husband, a wife, a son, a daughter, mother, father, etc. And it happens maybe suddenly. Maybe even through gunfire. Well, in this case, you have the President of the United States ripped out from under you. And not only do you have to deal with that, you have to move out of the house that you're living in. And she has to make those arrangements for where she's going to put all of this stuff and continue along with whatever the Kennedy legacy is going to be. The movie shows her dealing with the trauma of that and having to deal with her very young two children, Caroline and John John. She has to make the arrangements for the funeral and the memorial service and the Johnsons, because LBJ and his wife Lady Bird, they are now going to move into that house, and their staff has to move into the house, and the Kennedy staff has to move out, and she's got to be the public face of this. And it does all of this by combining some archival footage with reenactments and with this terrific performance by Natalie Portman as Jackie Kennedy. Peter Sarsgaard is in there as RFK. He's the low point in the movie because the accent he does is wrong.
It's horrible.
It's just not good. Greta Gerwig is in there as Jackie's right-hand woman, Nancy Tuckerman. John Hurt plays a priest that she turns to for moral support. And the latest JFK lookalike in the movie is an actor whose name you'll never hear again. I'll tell you right now, Casper Philipson. Don't bother thinking about it. You'll never hear it again. That's all this guy will ever be known for. Now, I do want to say one other thing about this, and that is that the score in this movie is way too much in the foreground. It was like they went for a dramatic orchestration because of the dramatic scenes they were having, but they brought the background music up way into the foreground, and yes. It's not just to the theater I saw it in.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere throughout this movie, and I found it very, very distracting.
Oh, but it's such a good score because it's this atonal kind of weird, sharp thing that everything... I love the score. I'm willing to forgive it. I think it fits so well.
It annoyed me so much that it knocked this down. I'm giving it a 6.5 out of 10.
I enjoy this movie. The line that she walks between losing control completely. At one point, she goes to the Secret Service. She's like, I have to go talk to Oswald. I have to talk to him.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, you can't. she's right on that line of being like cold and calculating and preserving his legacy and losing her mind.
Yep.
And she does that well.
Yep.
I gave it a 7 out of 10, about the same. Not my favorite movie of the year.
I had never heard Jackie Kennedy talk, or I don't remember hearing her talk. Natalie Portman does it in this kind of quiet, breathy tone throughout the whole movie. She's kind of at this level, no matter who she's talking to or what she's talking about. And I asked somebody after the screening, who is older than I am, was that what Jackie Kennedy sounded like? Oh, yeah. She nailed it.
She nailed, yeah.
She got it perfectly.
Yep.
Probably going to be nominated for an Academy Award for this.
Yes. She should not win Best Actress. Best Actress should go to Isabelle Huppert, who is in a movie called Elle. It's a foreign language film. She plays a French successful businesswoman who engages in this weird game of kind of cat and mouse. She has to track down the man who raped her. It's a great revenge movie. Oh, my gosh, it's good.
And that's also opening this weekend?
Elle is opening this weekend. Go watch it. Elle, 8 out of 10. It's very good. Very good.
Next week, the best and worst movies of 2016 here on the Big 550 KTRS.